uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, CRN Digital, and also podcasting on Apple iTunes. Welcome to our program. Just very quickly, I just want to just get this out, get it, you know, just to deal with it. I am getting all kinds of emails from folks saying, hey, your name's up at the top of the Air America Radio website. What's going on? It says that your show is from noon to 3 Eastern time. Are you replacing Al Franken? All these kinds of... No, I'm not replacing Al Franken. Al does a great job, and he's doing a great show, and he's on many stations. He's going to continue doing that. What we have worked out with Air America Radio is that they're going to be handling the affiliate relations. They're going to be working with our radio stations and helping us get new radio stations as time goes along, and they're going to be selling the advertising on the program, and we're going to be originating our show through New York, but I'll still be here in Portland, Oregon doing the show. They're just going to be dropping the ads in and the bumpers and things from New York starting within the next few weeks, and starting this weekend. In fact, the first one will be Sunday. I will be doing... They will be taking our Friday show and kind of redigesting it, as it were, to become a best-of show that's going to run every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., I believe, on the Air America Radio Network. I'm not absolutely certain about all the details on this, but that appears to be the way it's going to be. At the very least, it'll be on WLIB in New York City. And so that's what it is. That's the whole deal, and it's a wonderful thing, and I'm very, very proud and very pleased to be affiliated with Air America Radio. And the sound and feel of this program is not going to change in any way. It's going to be the exact same program it always has been, and it's just, you know, hopefully over time it'll be on more radio stations. So that's the bottom line, and it's still a Tom Hartman radio program. And on Fridays, the first hour of our program, still always have Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the United States House of Representatives, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in the history of that body. He's been reelected 7 times. He's now going to be running for the United States Senate from Vermont. His websites are bernie.house.gov and bernie.org. And Congressman Sanders is with us every Friday, taking your questions and calls, considerations, concerns, complaints, criticism, whatever it may be. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. And Bernie, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Tom, and congratulations about being picked up by Air America.
Thank you.
As you and I have talked about many times, and I know as many of your listeners understand, clearly one of the major problems our country faces is that ordinary Americans don't have the opportunity to hear points of view that are different than corporate America's. And you have done a great job, and now Frank and a number of other people have done a great job in trying to bust open onto talk radio so that we just don't hear the G. Gordon Liddy's and the Rush Limbaugh's and all of these right-wing extremists. So congratulations on your success.
Well, thank you, Bernie. Thanks. And, in fact, one of the things a lot of folks don't know, I was there actually at the very beginning of Air America when it was Anshel Media and it was Shelley Drobny, his wife Anita, putting the thing together. And John Sinton and I showed up for meetings in Chicago. And in some ways, it grew out of an article that I wrote for Common Dreams called Talking Back to Talk Radio about how progressive talk radio could actually be a successful business in America these days. Why doesn't somebody do it? And they said, okay, cool, we'll do it.
And, in fact, we are seeing more and more of that, are we not?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in the midst of this, we're also seeing more and more of the right-wing spin coming out of the Bush administration, particularly around this flood, which they would characterize as a hurricane, but really it's the flood that's killing all these folks.
Absolutely. I was on the floor of the House yesterday, and they got their talking points down pretty clearly, and that's what goes on the right-wing radio as well as on the floor of Congress, and that is we can't engage in the blame game, the blame game. The blame game. We have work to do. People are doing a great job going out there, and it's just counterproductive to be blaming everybody. The reality is, obviously, that there are people who are doing heroic work out there right now. But the other reality is that we have got to focus on what has happened, the disastrous response from the federal government, not just to be critical of the Bush administration, but to understand that Hurricane Katrina had, what do we have, a week warning on that?
Yeah, about five days in advance. It was pretty obvious it was coming.
We had 5 days of warning.
And it even hit Florida first. as if to say, hello,
well,
I'm here.
I don't want to get anyone too nervous, but I doubt very much that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda will give us 5 days warning. And what I think frightens and disturbs people is not only the loss of lives that should not have happened because of the irresponsible response on the part of FEMA and the Bush administration, but people are saying, wait a minute, we have put billions and billions of dollars into homeland security. The president tells us every day that we have to worry about al-Qaeda. And if, God forbid, there's another attack on the United States, how are we going to be responding in terms of emergency response? And if Katrina is any indication, we have got a lot to worry about. So while, obviously, the immediate task is to do everything that we can, and that is a huge task indeed, to help the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who are have been evacuated from Louisiana and Mississippi, and do all that we can to give them the kind of help that they desperately need. It is absolutely appropriate to try to understand what went wrong so that it doesn't occur again. And clearly, at the top of the ladder, they got a couple of issues. We have a fellow named Michael Brown, who's the head of FEMA, and I just signed on to a letter that is circulating in the House of Representatives now asking for his resignation. And the fact that the president would appoint somebody to this life and death situation, emergency management is emergency response management, is not a joke. People live or die, as we have seen in Katrina, depending on how well we perform. And this guy's past experience was head of the Arabian Horse Association. That is a real insult to the American people. His predecessor, in fact, was, I guess, the campaign manager for the president and a good Republican operative. What we need at FEMA and what we need in all of those positions to deal with emergency management are skilled, experienced, trained people who know the science of emergency response. So my first thought is we should be getting rid of Michael Brown. My second thought is, as someone who voted in 2002 against merging FEMA into Homeland Security, that it makes sense to segregate that agency again because the tasks are independent in many respects of what Homeland Security does.
By the way, I neglected to say this in the opening. Yesterday was one of my daughter's birthdays, the one who is the political activist in the family. It was also your birthday?
It was my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Adele.
Thank you,
Bernie.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Now, back to FEMA. We have to give Michael Brown some credit, don't we? I mean, when he was the head of the International Arabian Horse Owners Association, he did have one spectacular success. He busted a guy who had used liposuction on a horse's butt.
I mean, but the truth is, Bob, it's really not even...
I'm being facetious.
This is not even funny here.
I mean,
you know, we understand. I mean, politics is what it is in America, and you've had Republican presidents and Democratic presidents appointing these zillionaire campaign contributors to be your ambassador to this and that. But, you know, underneath the ambassadors, you have people who actually know what they're doing. You have a strong foreign service who writes these guys speeches and so forth and so on. But the head of FEMA actually has real decision-making power. And when people in America heard him telling somebody, I think it was on CNN, that he had not been aware that there were some thousands and thousands of people in the convention center in New Orleans, when everybody in America, else in America, knew this, I mean, people were really shaking their heads. So I think two things. Number one, I think Michael Brown has got to go. And number two, we have to separate FEMA once again from Homeland Security because they have a kind of unique job to do.
And one of the things that a lot of folks don't realize, Bernie Sanders, is that the number two guy under Michael Brown, his only qualifications for the job was that he was the event planner for the Bush campaign, for the Bush-Cheney campaign in 2004, I believe it was. And the number three guy under Michael Brown, his only qualification for the job is that he was the PR director for the Bush campaign in Texas in 2000.
So, I mean, what it has become is a dumping ground for old political Republican operatives. And you know what? I mean, that happens in politics, but not in FEMA. Not when it's a life and death situation, not when we need experienced, knowledgeable people who know how to save people's lives. So that is, to my mind, an absolute outrage. So A, let's separate FEMA from Homeland Security, and B, let's get some people in there who actually know something about emergency management.
Now, at the same time that this is going on, the Bush administration is using Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath and the horrible flooding in New Orleans, which came about in some part as a result of the hurricane and some part as a result of the failure of the Army Corps of Engineers to have appropriate funding, a whole other thing. They're using this to cut pay for people working in that area.
What a shock. What a shock. I mean, these guys have their pro-corporate right-wing ideology, and anything they can do to lower the wages and the working conditions for the American working people, no matter what the pretense might be. They did this in terms of Homeland Security. There was a huge debate about their capability of not negotiating with unions. Any opportunity they have, they will attack working people and unions. So I'm not terribly shocked, but I'm sure you'll see more of it to come as the billions of dollars begin being spent on this disaster.
Right, so people know what we're talking about. In 1931, Congress passed the Davis-Bacon Act, and that Davis-Bacon Act says that if money, federal money is being used for any project anywhere in the country, if they're hiring, local people are being hired with federal money, that they have to be paid the prevailing wage, the local prevailing wage, which is almost always above the minimum wage.
Of course it's above the minimum wage, and sometimes it's the union wage.
Right, and what George Bush did, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, but in the last 24 hours, George Bush signed an executive order repealing the Davis-Bacon Act in three states, in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana.
And you should know, Tom, of course, that they want to destroy Davis-Bacon nationally as well. So this is just one opportunity to inject that approach in a disaster area.
So just like the private accounts for Social Security is the poison pill to destroy Social Security, just like the you can't negotiate drug prices with Medicare is the poison pill to destroy Medicare, this is the beginning of the attack on Davis-Bacon?
Sure. Oh, no, though they've been attacking Davis-Bacon for year after year after year. What they want to do and what people, contractors, want to do in given regions is pay people very low wages. Now they're forced to pay at least reasonable wages, especially if there's strong union representation in the area and the prevailing wage is fairly high. Now these guys, contractors, have always hated that.
You know, a lot of people are looking at this, Bernie, and they're saying, what can we do?
Well, the answer, you know, and this issue comes up every week, and it should come up every week. And the bottom line here is, it's not good enough to rant and rave against George Bush or to make fun of him. There's serious work that has to be done, and that is the need for a political revolution in America to involve ordinary people in understanding the role of government, the role that they can play in making government responsive to all of us rather than the very wealthiest people and the largest corporations. And every single American can play an enormous role in it. And as I've mentioned many, many times, politics is not just 2 weeks before an election. It's today, it's yesterday, and it is next week. It is holding meetings. I know it's hard to do. And just because people don't do it or haven't done it doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. We got to organize people. We got to educate people so that ordinary Americans get a fair shake from their government.
Get out there and get active. By the way, just a quick note to our local affiliates. We've got a scratchy ISDN line to our satellite. We're going to drop it and pick it back up again during the local avails in this break set. It is the Tom Hartman radio program. Our telephone number, 866-889-8894. Congressman Bernie Sanders here to take your questions. We'll be back with that right after this, 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's our regular Friday afternoon brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And Jeff in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much. Happy birthday, Congressman Sanders. I want to thank both of you for being one of the good guys.
Thank you.
My question in specific was, and you kind of touched on this, is there anything that Congress can do to override an executive order? And that's a pretty short answer right there. So if I can just throw one other thing in very quickly. I just heard that the court has ruled that the United States can hold an American citizen as an enemy combatant indefinitely. If you could touch on that, I'd appreciate it, and I will hang up and listen. Thanks again, guys. You're great.
Thanks, Jeff.
In answer to Jeff's first question, the United States Congress can do anything that it wants to do. It can pass legislation tomorrow overriding anything. Obviously, we would need to be able to sustain a presidential veto, which is not the case. We would need to have the desire, the willingness to do that, which certainly does not exist either. The Republicans, we have right-wing Republicans who control the House of Representatives, who control the Senate, who see their major function in life as not as an independent part of government, but as a tool of the Bush administration working hand in glove with them. So you're not going to see any congressional action to do anything to protect working people in terms of prevailing wages or, I suspect, any other issue. I am sorry to hear about the decision of the court. One of the many issues that some of us are deeply concerned about is that in the midst of the fight against terrorism, this Bush administration is moving very aggressively to undermine a number of constitutional rights that we cherish to make us a free country. I have worked quite hard in opposition to a number of sections of the USA Patriot Act, especially Section 215, which deals right now with the ability of the FBI to go into libraries and bookstores. So the fight to make sure that while we vigorously protect the American people against terrorism and another terrorist attack, that we do that without undermining constitutional rights, wow, that is a huge issue that we've got to stay glued to.
Yeah, this federal court has just ruled that the 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments of the Constitution are irrelevant.
Well, and that takes us to the whole issue of where we are right now with filling up Rehnquist's and Sandra Day O'Connor's position on the Supreme Court. You have certainly people in the Congress who do not believe in a separation of powers, who have very right-wing views. These are people, oddly enough, who claim to be conservatives and yet believe that in instance after instance, the federal government can have enormous power over the rights of ordinary people. That's not a conservative doctrine. That is anything but that. So who is on our courts and how we make sure that courts protect the constitutional rights of Americans is a issue that everybody has got to stay focused on.
Dennis in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Dennis, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Howdy, folks. First of all, happy birthday to you, Congressman Sanders.
Thank you.
You've become one of my favorite people, actually probably my favorite politician right now.
And thank
Tom
you.
Tom is fast becoming my unofficial guru. So But my question is, and let me be clear about this, I'm a descendant of American slaves, so, but I think the Black Caucus is going about this all wrong. I think they need to make it a class issue, mm-hmm. which it really is, instead of a race issue. And my biggest concern besides that is that the blame game, and we're getting off track of what the real problem is here. Katrina unearthed quite a few problems, and it showed America for what it really was. It showed us that showed the world that, you know, pure capitalism is not the answer to having a happy population and keeping and making a safe world for its majority of its population. The answer, and I think you guys need to pursue this. And my other concern is, what's going to happen to all these contracts that are being given out right now?
Good.
Are any black contractors going to get to participate in this? Because less than 0.5% of business revenue in this country is generated through black-owned businesses, and that's what I think this hurricane unearthed.
Good one, Dennis.
Dennis raised some really good questions that we'll get to when we get back on the air.
Right after the break, yep. It's 29 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Richard in Henderson.
Well, let's get to Richard, Tom. Let's answer Dennis's question.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry, Bernie.
Dennis, I think, made a very, very important point. And the point is that what Hurricane Katrina has exposed is the incredible amount of poverty that exists in America, and the fact that those poverty rates are going up. What George Bush and his friends simply do not understand, because all of them are themselves millionaires and they hang out with millionaires, they don't understand that in New Orleans You had tens and tens of thousands of very poor people, elderly people who are on limited incomes, disabled people who could not leave town. They didn't have an SUV to get into and go to a hotel someplace else. They had no money, nowhere to go, and that's why they stay there. This is something that somebody like a Bush simply can't get. Was it color or was it class? I think it was primarily class. They don't understand what's going on among poor people in America, and that is why they could go about cutting Medicaid by billions of dollars, cutting back on community action programs that administer funding for low-income people. And I think Dennis hit it right on the head.
And this is why Barbara Bush would walk around the Astrodome and say, well, these people were all underprivileged to begin with. This is working out very well for them.
I mean, that is absolutely an incredible statement. But these people, I mean, you know, Bush is there vacationing on his, what is it,
1,600 acres.
60, and they haven't a clue of what goes on in the real world, not only for poor people, but for middle-income people as well.
Yeah. Richard in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Bernie, God bless you. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You are the man. There's no question about it. And, you know, how inconsiderate are those people in New Orleans to be poor? My question is this. Why is it, in your opinion, that more congressional Republicans have not broken ranks with this administration? Isn't it, after all, time for all thinking individuals to distance themselves from this disastrous administration?
Well,
what are these guys thinking
you have,
about?
That is an excellent question. And something, frankly, that has bothered me very, very much. I know a lot of Republicans in the House, and they are not, these guys are nuts. They are not necessarily right-wing extremists. They're conservative guys. They understand that people like Tom DeLay and some of these other people are completely off the wall. And yet, despite all of that, the only Republican who had the guts to say, wait a second, this is not the Republican Party that I grew up in or want to stay in, was Jim Jeffords from my own home state of Vermont, who grew up, his father was a Republican, grew up as a Republican, and suddenly, one day he looked around him and he said, wait a second, this party has nothing to do with what I believe in as a moderate American. Jim Jeffords is no great progressive, moderate guy. And the point that you are making is, where are all of those smart, and they are there, moderate-type Republicans? Why haven't they stood up and say, wait a second, Tom DeLay and these right-wing extremists do not represent me? You have raised a very good and disturbing question that a lot of Republicans in Congress and throughout this country should be thinking about.
Bob in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Bob, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yeah, happy birthday, Congressman Sanders. I'm sure it's 39.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious about what your opinion is in regards to the latest decision on the Supreme Court about eminent domain and private parties being right. able to exercise it. What do you see the potential of that happening once the bulldozers are through in New Orleans?
I strongly disagree with that decision. I think it's going to impact negatively on poor people. I think what you're going to see, unless we stop it, unless cities and towns and states do not become aggressively involved in this issue, I think what you're going to see is municipalities working with large corporations, taking the homes of working people and poor people for private profit and for corporate greed. I think it's an issue that is a huge issue. I disagree with that Supreme Court decision. I think their interpretation was wrong.
Florian in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Florian, you're live.
Yeah. Congratulations on your birthday, Bernie.
Thank you.
Question with regards to the cost of the hurricane damage.
Yep.
The numbers that have been bantered about are $150 to $200 billion federal government costs. Is there any way to get legislation to have this paid for under the balance of this administration, like in the next 3 years, by rescinding the tax cuts for the wealthy, surtax on corporate profits, things of that nature?
Well, that is exactly right, and that is something that we should be doing. As I think all of the listeners know, probably the achievement that President Bush is most proud of is the fact that he was able to give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1 or 2% of the American people. Meanwhile, the deficit is soaring. The national debt is close to $8 trillion of debt that we're leaving to our kids and our grandchildren. Meanwhile, the Bush people haven't given up. despite Katrina, despite the tens of billions of dollars that taxpayers will be spending to resettle people and to rebuild lives, these guys want to go forward now with the repeal of the estate tax, which will provide hundreds of billions more in tax breaks for the richest 2%, and half of the benefits are going to go, if you can believe it, to the richest 0.1%. These people have no shame. So instead of doing the right thing, as the caller indicated, and saying, okay, look, we have a serious deficit right now. We're spending billions of dollars that we have to spend. Instead of running up the deficit, running up the national debt, let's ask our wealthy friends who are making out like bandits in general. Let's rescind some of the tax breaks that we gave them. No, I'm afraid that what these guys want to do is give them even more tax breaks. Really, absolutely amazing, and tells us that these people, in terms of greed, they just don't give up. That's their mantra. That's their religion. Greed, 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 more, more, more. And the fact that our grandchildren and children will have a huge debt to pay off, not their concern.
Our phone number, 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment every Friday afternoon here for the last, what, year and a half or so we've been doing this,
yep.
Bernie. Mike in Burlington, Vermont on the line. Hey, Mike, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Thank you. Both of you do a fantastic job. I just want to let you know that.
Thank you,
Mike. Bernie, I know that I read in the paper the other day that 15 states are suing the administration for not holding energy, for not holding corporations accountable for energy products, not meeting the standards that Congress has set.
Energy efficiency, you mean?
Yes. Sorry. Thank you, Tom. Is that something that they could do with the gas prices? Something they could file suit against the gas companies for taking advantage of a situation?
Absolutely, Mike. Absolutely. With all of the disruption in the refineries and in the pipelines and so forth, you know, it is impossible to predict what the real cost has been to the oil industry. My initial feeling is, everything being equal, that these guys will use any crisis, any disruption, to make even more money than they were making before. And believe me, before they were making huge sums of money, ExxonMobil made more money than any other company in America, made $7 billion profit the first quarter, in the last quarter alone. So what we have got to do is not let these guys take advantage of the situation to make billions more while truck drivers and working people are paying $3.50 for a gallon of gas. I know in my state of Vermont, a rural state, it is not uncommon for people to travel 100 miles to work, you know, to and fro work. And we have got to demand, and we have, I've introduced legislation to do this, to make it very clear as to what the additional costs really, really are, and track them, and impose a windfall profits tax on these guys with rebates to the people of America if they are ripping off the consumers.
Tom in Minneapolis, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Tom. Happy birthday, Bernie.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, last caller before the break asked, or he said, the answer is not pure capitalism. And, of course, we all know the answer is genuine democracy, democracy in the workplace, democracy on the weekend, democracy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And often people on the right and the left, Bernie, I mean, they even called you a socialist, Bernie, and I know you and Tom, you're a genuine believer in genuine democracy, people power. And these conservatives have confused both the liberals and the you know, conservatives, that capitalism is democracy. And they keep using this, and the liberals have to fight back and teach people that democracy is superior to the market system. We, the people, decide how we're going to organize our system. Usually it's regulated capitalism. They call regulation socialism, which it's not, but that's how they win the argument.
Well, they call it, you have to remember, Tom, they, because they're very, very wealthy friends, elect them to office. Their very wealthy friends own the major sources of media. Their wealthy friends own a lot of the think tanks who keep spouting this ideology. My experience is that when you talk to people, not only in my own state of Vermont, which is probably more progressive than most states, but all over America, when you say to people, do you think we should have a government that represents the needs of all people rather than the very wealthy? People say, yeah. Should we have a health care system that guarantees health care to all people as a right of citizenship? Yeah, people think so. Do you think we should privatize Social Security so that Wall Street can make billions out of people's investments rather than continuing the guarantees that we have right now? People say no. So I think, interestingly enough, ideologically, on issue after issue after issue, people disagree with Bush in huge ways. They don't think we should give tax breaks to billionaires and cut back on the needs of our veterans. The problem is these guys have a very potent political machine. They have the media to a significant degree behind them. And most importantly, we are living in an era where big money buys politicians. It costs zillions of dollars to run for office. Where do you think people are going to get their money? They get it from the RNC, the Republican National Committee. Where do they get it from? They get it from the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance companies, the big energy people. So one should not be surprised that the end result is you have members of Congress who vote for the wealthy and the powerful rather than for their ordinary constituents back home. So I don't think we you know, ideologically, I think we have the vast majority of the people behind us. The question is how we go from there, how we organize, how we educate, how we turn our ideology into political strength so that we elect people who are prepared to stand up to big money.
Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tony in San Diego, California. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders, Tony.
Hello. I want to say first, thank you, Congressman Sanders, for coming on this show. I actually tune in religiously on this day specifically to hear this part, and Tom will like the fact that I don't change channel during commercials.
Okay. Thanks, Tony.
But the reason why I called was there was years ago, there was talk about some rumors about Bush administration trying to privatize FEMA, but that didn't seem to go over too well, and it got sort of folded into Homeland Security. And I'm wondering, is this whole so-called failure of FEMA now just a plot to show to the country, hey, FEMA doesn't work, and let's just get rid of it?
No, I don't think so. I think quite the contrary. I think this national disgrace and the inability of FEMA to save lives and move aggressively simply shows that the people who are running FEMA are totally incompetent, that the Bush administration does not think that emergency management is a very high priority, or else they would not have appointed a guy knowledgeable about Arabian horses in that position. And what it tells many of us, and I think the American people, is A, we got to separate FEMA from Homeland Security, and B, and more importantly, we need competent, experienced, knowledgeable people to be running an extremely important agency.
Although we do find, Bernie, that last year FEMA outsourced the planning for a flood-type disaster in the Louisiana, southern Louisiana area, including New Orleans, to a private corporation, the owner of which had given over $10,000 to various Republican campaigns, including the George W. Bush campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like you look at that and go, whoa, what's going on here? Jeff in Findlay, Ohio on the line. Hey, Jeff, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Mr. Sanders, I want to tell you a story. When I was 19 years old, my grandfather passed away and left me $60,000. I bought two trucks with that. Now I'm 47. I got 154 trucks and I employ 300 people and I work myself to death to build my business. And when I die, can I leave it to my kids? They're going to tax me to death. I should be able to leave my business to my kids.
How much is your business worth, Jeff?
$45 million.
Okay.
And I earned every dime of it, Tom.
So, Jeff, I'm not disagreeing with you. Don't you think, Bernie, that it would be reasonable to raise... What the whole point of the estate tax was to prevent dynasties from having so much power that they could influence government. Why not raise the cap on the estate tax to something like $100 million or $200 million?
Well, it has been raised in recent years. I don't have the figures in front of us. But the fact of the matter is this particular legislation, Jeff, was pushed by the Mars Candy Company, people who are worth billions of dollars. And I got to tell you something. Yeah, I do think that people who are worth billions of dollars should be asked to contribute into our nation in a reasonable way.
You know what it costs me every year just to comply with the tax code? It's insanity.
But that's, Jeff.
When you employ people, it's insanity.
Let me just answer, Jeff. You know, Jeff, you sound like a hardworking guy, and I believe everything that you're saying. The fact of the matter is, what we're seeing in America, Jeff, is the richest people in this country are becoming richer, poverty is increasing, the middle class is shrinking. And the fact of the matter is that despite the fact that the richest people are becoming richer, you know what, Jeff? They're paying less in taxes. Middle-class people are paying more in taxes. I just talked to a guy who said to me very embarrassingly, he said, you know, I am very, very rich. I'm talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. You know how much money I paid in taxes last year? I paid almost nothing because you have a tax system that allows them to avoid paying that fish.
Well, my business is my passion.
I understand that,
Jeff. Every time I get a tax cut, I think all that money back into my business, or I pay my people more money.
And that's great, Jeff. And I applaud you for doing that. But you got to know, Jeff, that there are folks out there, I mean, you do know, that we have the largest gap between the rich and the poor of any country on earth. And, yes, I think we need money not only for Katrina. We need money for health care. We need money for education. And it shouldn't be the middle class who has to pay more. It should be upper-income people. Sorry, that is my view.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate that. And the other point is that Jeff has been able to make that success because of the commons, because of the joint, the collective infrastructure of a stable currency, the Treasury Department, a court system that allows him to enforce contracts, a court system that's paid for with our tax dollars.
Look, you know, I think we should respect entrepreneurs like Jeff and zillions of other people who are hardworking and make money. But you know what? There is also a code of justice and egalitarianism that we should pay attention to as well.
Basic fairness. Thank you. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our number 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 55 minutes past the hour, about 5 minutes before the hour, 4.5 minutes before the hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie, let's go to, let's see here, Jerry in Wisconsin is on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Oh, Bernie, Tom, it's an honor to be on the line with you. I really appreciate everything you guys are doing. I myself am, I've been milling over the past year or two, or maybe just the past year, just an idea. I'm a truck driver, have been for quite some time. We've got there's a lot of drivers out here. It doesn't make any difference if they're owner-operators or they just work for little mom-and-pops. I'm thinking about Jeff and Finley, Ohio, everybody. I'm going to organize as best I can a website, blog, whatever it may be, or both, and keep it up to date on a laptop to actually get this. You know, I mean, I appreciate anybody that's doing anything as far as, you know, marching on Washington, Cindy Sheehan, that is very admirable, and that, of course.
Jerry, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're really short on time here.
Can you ask a question for Bernie? We're going to strike. It's not a question. It's a statement. I'm letting you know this country is going to come to a grinding halt, and it's going to be because the truck drivers and Congress, the United States, will listen.
Jerry, is that because of the high gas prices?
It's about the high gas prices. About Exxon making it, Exxon Mobil, they've been in the limelight.
The truckers are really taking it on the chin, and I suspect a lot of these guys are losing money right now, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're folding up right and left. I mean, you know, the companies are just going under, and then they're practically giving away their equipment. And, you know, we've got such a voice out here.
Jerry, we need your voice.
You will hear it. Yeah, you will hear it.
We're not going to let ExxonMobil rip off the American people or the truck drivers of this country.
Well, they're doing it now, and I don't think I don't look for a check from them anyway soon. You know,
unless you're a stockholder.
But I mean, like I said, you will hear about this later down the road.
Okay, Jerry, thanks a lot for that. Bernie, last 20 seconds, wrap it up here. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Jerry and all over this country, people are catching on that we're not going to make changes. We're not going to be able to take on corporate American big money unless people stand up and fight back. And that's what the message is today, and that's what the message always is.
Thank you. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment every Friday, the first hour of our program. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thank you so much for being with us, Bernie.
Thank you.
We'll see you again next week. Telling the truth that the multinational corporations very often would really rather you didn't know about. It's the Tom Hartman Show.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio, the place where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Are there shadowy forces at work trying to destroy Social Security? Could it be? Is it possible? Frankly, surprise, surprise, Joe Connison is with us. He's the author of a new book on this very topic. A columnist for the New York Observer, Salon.com. The new book, The Raw Deal, How the Bush Republicans Plan to Destroy Social Security and the Legacy of the New Deal. Hey, Joe.
How are you?
I am absolutely great, but I'll get better. Great to have you here with us in the studio.
It's great to be with you.
Tell us about the premise of this book. Who are the shadowy forces working to destroy Social Security?
Well, you know, I don't think they're necessarily all that shadowy. They're pretty well established. It's the Republican Party, a number of very well-funded think tanks in Washington, D.C., notably the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation, and quite a bit of the right-wing media in America is dedicated to this, to the proposition that we would all be better off if we didn't have Social Security and a lot of other core functions of the modern state that we depend on, and that whose failure has become so obvious in the last week.
Let's drill down a little bit into this, Joe. It seems to me that the core of this philosophy in some ways comes out of Ayn Rand's writings, you know, the Atlas Shrugged, the whole objectivist perspective that who is John Galt? That the lone individual should be the focus of society,
right?
That greed is good, that selfishness is the positive virtue that ultimately will animate all social goods, and that the only purpose of government is to keep the barbarians from the borders of the country.
Ayn Rand would have said you could have a private army. You know, you could have a private police force. It could all be privatized. You really don't need a government. And so what's particularly bizarre about this is that these people, on the one hand, will be waving the flag as if they're patriotic Americans. And, in fact, they don't believe in the foundations of the American state.
They believe in a corporate state.
They believe, if anything, a corporate state. That's right. They would be much happier if private corporations ruled this country rather than having a democratic government of, by, and for the people.
A corporate state like Benito Mussolini envisioned when he said, gee, how do we create a government that will survive through all the vicissitudes, all the difficulties? Well, let's take the strongest elements of society. Let's take the power of the state with its guns and its ability to imprison people and combine that with the power of corporate wealth. And he dissolved Parliament in Italy and replaced it with the Cameo de Fascisio Corporationis, pardon my lousy Italian, the Chamber of Fascist Corporations. And if you were represented in the past by Senator Wyden, for example, now you're represented by whoever Phil Knight decides is going to represent you because he owns the largest corporation in your state.
If you go back to the beginnings of Social Security, Tom, you see that the opponents of Social Security were the same forces in the society, the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, and other groups analogous to what you're talking about, who were the biggest opponents of FDR and of Social Security and of the New Deal in general, and who were not accidentally quite sympathetic to fascist forces in those days. I mean, there's no reason to mince words about it. That's history. What really happened.
Well, and in fact, as Smedley Butler pointed out, I mean, he outed these guys, General
Smedley
Butler.
There was a plot. That's correct. There was a plot to overthrow the government by emanating from a group called the Liberty League, which had financing from the DuPont family. And what's interesting about this, and I go into this in the book, is these are the same people who want to dismantle Social Security today. Their heirs, in essence, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce now, the National Association of Manufacturers, which still exists and is extremely powerful, and for that matter, Pete DuPont, who is the heir to the DuPont family legacy, was the first presidential candidate, I think, since Barry Goldwater, to bring up the idea of dismantling Social Security back in 1988 when he had a mercifully brief candidacy for President of the United States as a Republican.
So something's coming into view here, Joe Connison, that in some ways you could say almost looks like the classic conspiracy theory, really the conspiracy theory of the right. I mean, I remember back in 1964 when I was 13 years old and I read None Dare Call It Treason by Joe Stormer. My father was a Republican. He was in the county Republicans. You know, I went out and worked for Barry Goldwater. I mean, I was convinced the commies were coming to get us.
Yes, that was a Birch Society book.
Yeah, I know. And, but it's like in the best tradition of the John Birch Society and the radical right, their big fear was that a shadowy group, in their minds it was the communists, would take over the government and then use the power of the government against we the people. And it seems like that's what's happening. A shadowy group has taken over our government and they're trying to destroy our government.
They are trying to destroy our government, and they are destroying it both intentionally and through their own incompetence. I mean, we've seen kind of examples of both over the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years, with a very intentional move to get rid of Social Security, which is the most successful federal program we've ever had, where the president appointed a rigged commission in 2001 to examine what the future of Social Security would be, and everybody who was appointed to the commission was in favor of dismantling Social Security and creating a privatized system.
Surprise, surprise!
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Meanwhile, you also have sort of the incompetent disrespect for government, dismantling of government, where they put someone like Michael Brown in charge of FEMA. But, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this earlier. The Cato Institute, which has been kind of the shock troops of Social Security privatization for many years now, has been given a lot of power by the president to try to put this program forward, has an overall program which goes back to the Ayn Rand libertarian view, which is get rid of all these government agencies. So basically you wouldn't have a FEMA. They put out a handbook for the Congress with a budget for the United States government that it just urged them to abolish FEMA altogether, just get rid of this agency. They had two lines sort of saying we should get rid of this thing. Get rid of the Army Corps of Engineers. So basically, you're going back to a state of nature. In fact, people with a lot of money would have all the power.
Right. It's not even really a state of nature, because we know now that in nature, actually, democracy does rule.
That's a catchphrase. You're right. Yeah. It's not. It's actually a feudal state. It's a state in which If you go to Italy and you see what the Medici's built, you know, some of it's very beautiful, but it was based on absolute domination of the many by a very small number at the top.
Yeah, it's a dystopia. It's this strange dystopian vision.
And we've been trying to escape from that for about 500 years. Yeah. And had some success in doing so in the last century or two, and now we see we have a government somehow that seems determined, at least some of them, to bring us back to that state.
Joe Connison, we have a caller. Do you mind taking some calls?
Not at all.
Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Rick, you're live with Joe Connison.
Joe Connison, you're one of my favorite people. I read your book, The Plot to Get the President, and I read your columns on the Internet every once in a while, and I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
And I guess, you know, just a few minutes ago I heard you and Tom talking about, you know, the Birch Society thesis, and I think that, I don't want to be an apologist for them because I think they are way over too far to the right, but I think they hit it right on. The only problem is, I think most people think that they thought the communists were the big threat. What they were really afraid of, and I think all of us should be, is an oligarchy or a plutocracy. Very wealthy people who run oil companies and banks and so forth. And they will use any form of government they can. It can be fascist, Nazi, communist, theocracy, whatever. But the bottom line is they want to just squeeze the money out of all the rest of us, the poor and the middle class, and they don't care how they do it. And apparently they have somehow gulled the people of this country into thinking that it's a good idea to have a bunch of incompetent people whose only qualities for leadership are the fact that they happen to be rich, and a lot of times they haven't even worked for us. And I don't know how we get through to the people, because the strongest Republican area of the country is the Southeast, and in these poor states, which have been hit by the hurricane, but they somehow think that it's in their interest to vote against their economic self-interest because they don't like gays, they don't like abortion. So how do we get through to them?
And Joe, how do we convince them that the folks who tried to overthrow the federal government in the 1930s are the same people who are now controlling the government, that they actually were successful in their coup d'etat, and now they're systematically destroying it, dismantling it?
Well, you know, I think some of these lessons have to be learned from experience. I think we can talk ourselves blue in the face and and not get through unless people are in a frame of mind and a condition where they're ready to listen. I think those conditions are coming now. I think with the aftermath of this hurricane and the shocking lack of response by the federal government, because it's been dismantled by these people, there are more people willing to pay attention to this. And I think also the Social Security experience is part of this as well, where you saw, you have seen the American people basically reject the privatization program all across the country, including in the reddest of red states. Politicians are afraid to get behind this program. They're going to try to move something like this through the House, but it's not going to pass the Senate. And I think a lot of Republicans are afraid because people realize Social Security is an essential part of the federal government. Don't try to take it away. And you can get people to start to listen to the rest of the truth about what's happening to them, I think, as they confront these very stark choices.
It's gonna start happening. Michael in Monterey, California, on the line, listening on KRXA. Hey, Michael.
Hey, I'm a caterer down here, and in 1982 we worked for Justin Dart, who was part of the Reagan kitchen cabinet, and he had a party back then where he had the head of every major insurance company come over to the house, and the entire dinner was about plotting to take over Social Security back then. And they had a Democratic senator from Oklahoma that was, quote, on our side, unquote. And they gave him a solid gold-plated Winchester Model 1876 3030 and talked about how helpful he'd been to the cause of privatizing it. This is 1982. And in the end, when we got our check, it came from University of Southern California.
That's a fascinating story. Would you mind sending me more information about that at my email address, which is jconnison1@aol.com. I'd really appreciate that. That's really,
yeah,
I didn't know about that, and that sounds like a fascinating story. Of course, back then, it's true that President Reagan, who had worked in the Goldwater campaign and wanted to abolish Social Security, was basically beaten back from that. He was stopped from doing that. In fact, put in a pretty responsible program to strengthen Social Security that was created in conjunction with the Democratic Congress, because at that time the Democrats still had complete control of the House and a very close control of the Senate, or Senate control was fluctuating back and forth during the 80s. But in any case, President Reagan did not have the opportunity to privatize Social Security as much as they might have wanted to, because power was more equal between the two parties than now, with power concentrated in one party. They saw an opportunity to try to do this again, and that's why you saw this come up early this year after President Bush was reelected and they maintained control of both houses of Congress.
So fascinating. Joe, we've got to wrap this up, but it is so important that people get out there and get active. We have an election coming up in about 13 months here. Now is the time, 14 months. Now is the time to get politically active, to involve yourself, to join a party, to go to democracyforamerica.com, sign up for a meetup. There's so many different ways to get, even if you're a Republican, get active in the Republican Party. Take them back. I mean, we need to take back America.
That'd be a great idea.
Yeah. Joe Connison, thanks for being with us. Joe Connison's new book.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I don't want millions, mister.
No, I just like my job.
I don't want your diamond ring.
You tell him, Tom Rush.
All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
Well, you see, Tom, George W. has this philosophy about, giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and thinking that that's going to cause them to want to create a job, when in fact what it does is it causes them to want to create a job in China. Anyhow, welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Alan Ratner's with us from Washington, D.C., our bureau chief, our correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hey, Alan.
You know, the longer I'm in Washington, the more astounded I am by the news. Time Magazine apparently is reporting today, I have not seen it, but is reporting today that Brown, that is the guy who is in charge of FEMA,
who formerly was busting people who liposuctioned the butts of their horses.
Right. Reported that he exaggerated his emergency management experience on his resume.
Yes. The Center for American Progress is reporting that as well.
And that...
and that he didn't have an accredited law degree, by the way.
It's just... It is staggering.
Yeah. Well, he's a Republican, Ellen.
Right. And also... Well, now it has been reported that he is going to be removed from taking care of Katrina, and that Coast Guard Vice Admiral Thad Allen is going to take over coordination of the Katrina recovery effort.
Oh, interesting. They're going to put somebody in charge who actually knows something about dealing with emergencies.
Isn't that staggering?
Yeah, it's a novel idea. I mean, nobody's thought about it since Bill Clinton left office.
It is, I mean... What happens is these people have to go through Senate confirmation. Does nobody investigate them?
Well, apparently not.
I mean, I honestly, I got news for you. My friend Blanquita Cullum, who's a right winger, is on the Broadcasting Board of Governors, and I saw the form she had to fill out for Senate approval. And I'll tell you something, it was the most comprehensive thing in the world because I sat with her and we, you know, we worked on it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you right now, I'm amazed they didn't look at this guy.
Yeah. Well, apparently they didn't, or they took you know what he said, and maybe that, you know, with Blanquita too. Maybe whatever she writes down, they just say, okay, that's cool. She's a Republican. We'll trust her.
Just totally and completely.
I mean, this guy was Joe Albaugh's college roommate, and Joe Albaugh was the former head of FEMA. He's now the a lobbyist for Halliburton, and of course Halliburton getting a contract now to help clean up after Katrina. Surprise, surprise. So,
yeah, that's right. The White House is also apparently some of what the people are saying is they feel like they've got almost another 2 weeks to sort of prove themselves on Katrina. And once they've done that, people, you know, their poll numbers will go back up.
That's what I'm saying. I've got an on-air bet with Heidi Tauber, who's my co-host or sidekick or whatever on my morning program here on KPOJ, betting her a pound of blueberries that within 1 month, more than 50% of Americans will say that Bush did an okay job and that the primary responsibility for the failures as a result of the hurricane lie with the Democrats in Louisiana, not with the Bush administration. She's betting that it won't, that the Americans won't buy it. But I've seen how these guys spun 9/11 after they failed with intelligence, how they spun the anthrax killer who has never been caught, how they spun Osama bin Laden who is still running around loose, how they lied about Iraq, and you still have more, you know, large chunks of America going along with it. I'm not underestimating them.
Well, the other thing that we're going to find out is that Jeb is going to step up and talk about how difficult it is to do cleanup after hurricanes as a way of sort of bolstering the president's job.
This is a full court press. They're bringing out every resource they've got. I mean, they've got the phone banks calling right-wing talk shows. They are spending, I'll bet you, Ellen, that behind the scenes, these guys are spending literally millions of dollars. And they got all these right-wing members of Congress now coming out. Their talking points are absolutely consistent right across the board. Karl Rove took control of it. You know, the New York Times reported it.
Yep, that's how it's going.
There you go. Ellen Ratner in Washington, D.C. Ellen, thanks for your report today. Great to hear from you, as always. What are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to get active. It's time to get politically active. You've got to get involved. We absolutely must get involved. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. I'm Tom Hartman. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. In just a moment, we're going to start another one of our regular Friday segments, our Best of the Rest of the News segment, where we get on a few folks who are in the news business. We're talking about, you know, what's been happening in the last week, what's coming up in the next week. And, you know, in general, all around, and all that kind of thing. In fact, we'll, might as well just do it right now. We have Christy Harvey with us and Doug Cunningham. Christy Harvey is the Director of Strategic Communications and a co-host with the Bill Press and Christy Harvey Show. Hey, Christy.
Hey, how are you?
Great, great. Great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm very pleased. And Doug Cunningham is a reporter anchor with the National Workers Independent News Service and produces a daily WIN news story on Air America Radio Network and also on KMOX on St. Louis, and also that we carry every hour on at the top of the hour and at the bottom of the hour, actually, on this program. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Christy. Glad to be with you guys today.
Hey, Doug.
Great to have you both here. Rather than just starting out with what's going on in the news, because I think that a lot of the news is fairly self-evident, I've got several calls that have been holding for a while here, and I'd like to bring some of these folks in and let them bring some up some issues, and we can all bounce off them. Is that okay with you guys?
That sounds like fun.
Okay, great. Let's start with Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan, what's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going? I was wondering, does anybody know if there was ever an election that a Republican president has won that has been actually fair in the last 30 years?
Well, I was going to say Abraham Lincoln.
No, I mean, I was just wondering. I mean, and my second point is, given that we have to be our own government, and the government doesn't want to be a government, so we have to watch everything, what is going to be the next catastrophe that they're going to neglect?
That's a good question, Logan. My take on the first part of that. I mean, you look back at the Nixon administration. That was when the Republicans fine-tuned the skill of deciding who their opponent was going to be. And Nixon did polling and discovered that Ed Muskie would beat him in a general election, but that Eugene McCarthy was that, or was it? I'm forgetting who it was in that election that Muskie was running against in the primary. But in any case, they decided to take out Muskie, and so they send Chuck Colson up there and, you know, put something in his coffee, and he's with acid or whatever it was, and he's up there on the and doing the dirty tricks, you know, the Canuck letter in New Hampshire, and he's up on the flatbed of the truck blubbering about his wife. And, of course, they're attacking his wife. I mean, this is what Republicans do. Attack, you know, if it's a woman, it gets attacked. And there you go. I mean, that's Republican elections, and then you got the October surprise in 1980, where they held the hostages. Bush negotiated this thing for them to hold the hostages so Reagan could beat Carter. I mean,
I think you might be onto something there. They really have perfected the art of the dirty trick, and Karl Rove studied at the knee of Lee Atwater, and so learned a lot of nasty lessons there. I think Karl Rove was famous for one of his early tricks was sending half-naked prostitutes and strippers to his opponent's campaign rallies and things like that. So, they seem to have it down to a science.
Karl Rove is the master of the smear. Doug, your thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say they've certainly honed it down to a scientific character assassination, basically, on their campaigns. I mean, they know how to drive people's negative numbers up, drive their approval ratings down. And it seems to be all about attacking and destroying their opponent on those grounds rather than dealing really honestly with the issues. So,
well, that's because on the issues, they basically don't believe in government, and that's not a very popular thing to say. You know, gee,
right.
We want to do away with Social Security. We want to do away with Medicare. We want to privatize your fire department.
In the wake of Hurricane Katrina, big government just might be a little more popular these days.
I think so, too.
Yeah, there you go. Eric in Williamsport, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi. Oh, my God. I'm pretty moderate, and I listen to you a lot. But I like to get both sides, so I listen to Rush Limbaugh and all those other guys from the extremist right. And I'm just wondering, what the Democrats keep on saying, let's just reform, let's just reform, let's just reform our Social Security, yet throughout history, they've screwed it up so many times.
Oh, wait a second. The Democrats invented Social Security over the
exactly.
loud objections of the Republicans.
Exactly, and guess what? And guess what? It was voluntary. At first off.
Social Security has never been voluntary.
Yes, it has.
No, insurance, it wouldn't work if it was voluntary.
Well, no, the participation in the program was completely voluntary when it first came out.
Well, if that's...
When it first came out, it was completely voluntary. Participants only had to pay 1% of their first $1,400 of their annual incomes into the program.
But it was not voluntary.
It was completely voluntary.
Okay, well, Eric, maybe you're right. I'll have to look into it. But the fact of the matter is that it's not voluntary right now. What's your point?
Well, my question is, how do the Democrats want to reform? Because I keep on hearing them.
Oh, very simple. Several proposals have been put forward. The one that makes the most sense to me is let's go with Steve Forbes. Let's do what Steve Forbes says. Let's make the Social Security tax a flat tax. Why is it that the Social Security tax is only paid by people who are making up to $80,000 or $90,000 a year? Why doesn't Bill Gates pay the same percentage that I pay?
Excuse me, my parents pay for Social Security all the time, and they make well over $100,000 a year.
And I guarantee you, Eric, that on the first $80,000 of their income, they're paying Social Security tax, and after that, they're not paying it anymore.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not. That's how the system is set up.
It doesn't matter how the system is set up. It's been screwed up so many
times. No, I'm telling you, Eric, after $80,000, you don't pay any Social Security tax, not one penny. And if you were to take
how the taxes are working.
No, I'm sorry, it is. Talk to a CPA, talk to anybody, look at your own tax forms. That's how it works. Seriously, I'm really serious. I'm sorry you're uninformed, you're misinformed, Eric. And if you simply lifted that cap and said Bill Gates pays the same percentage as I do and as you do, then the entire problem of the Social Security system would be solved. Not only that, it would have a lot more money than it needs 40, 50 years from now when the demographic bulge of the boomers passes through. Doug, your thoughts on that?
Well, Social Security, obviously the huge difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is the Democratic Party and folks who support Social Security really want to actually save the program, and they want to keep paying the benefits out to the retirees rather than slashing the program, privatizing it, draining money from it, and weakening the system. And ultimately, I think they would like to see, the Republicans would like to see Social Security just go away and everybody just be on their own again and, support themselves in retirement entirely without any assistance whatsoever, even though that program has been one of the most successful government programs in our history.
Well, and in fact, Republicans have been trying to destroy it ever since it was created, eh, Christy?
That's absolutely true, and the plan that they're putting forward these days does nothing to really fix it, does nothing to guarantee benefits, does nothing to make sure that people have the money to retire on. All it really does is trash the system and slash it into bits that make it really not very good for anyone.
Great. Good point. Jacob in Derry, New Hampshire, is on the line. Hey, Jacob, what's up?
Hi. I recently, or I guess like a few months ago, started listening and reading to David Ray Griffin. I first heard him on C-SPAN. And, he talks about you're probably aware, he talks about the 9/11 inconsistencies and the problems with the commission.
I'm familiar with it.
And I get really frustrated because it seems like this really important subject just is totally ignored, except in kind of verboten, or off limits, almost.
I think that most Americans, Jacob, are of the opinion, in my opinion, mistakenly, that the 9/11 Commission did a thorough investigation and that the issue has been settled. They don't realize that the 9/11 Commission was specifically and intentionally steered out of the way of introducing anything that might criticize the Bush administration. You're talking about the deficiencies of the Bush administration. David Ray Griffin raises a lot of questions. I think in some places he goes off the edge a little bit. But Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Center for American Progress, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do believe that it wasn't a perfect investigation, but I honestly think that they did a pretty good job with what they had to work with. And it was definitely better than no investigation at all, or definitely better than a congressional investigation. I think that the lessons to be learned from the 9/11 Commission in these days, with Katrina staring at us, are that you really do need to have this outside investigation, and it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be better than nothing.
And Doug Cunningham with Workers Independent News.
Well, looking back is obviously important, but looking forward now is even more important in the wake of Katrina, because Katrina, I think, unmasked the fact that the Bush administration's Homeland Security is not prepared to deal with mass catastrophes. And Saturday in New York City, there's going to be a congressional subcommittee hearing looking into the state of preparedness now, 4 years after September 11, 2001. And I think that really is the most important assessment right now, to assess where we are right now, how prepared are we or are we not, and what to do about that so that we can head off future catastrophes.
Bob in Flagstaff, Arizona, you're live and on the air.
Yes, Tom, hi. Two quick things. One about Air America. At some point later on, I missed the first minute of your show. If you could repeat just about when you're starting
the time. I'll just tell you right now. Air America Radio is going to be handling affiliate relations and selling advertising for my program. The program is not going to change. We're still going to be on all the stations that we've been on. We're still going to be on Sirius Satellite Radio. We may be picking up some new stations. I mean, we do all the time, right?
Okay.
I mean, we're just picking up Seattle and Sacramento. We just picked up recently San Antonio, and on it goes. In the future, Air America will be handling that rather than people in, you know, within our small organization here.
Okay.
But the program, you know, on your end of it, there's nothing's going to change with regard to the program.
Same time, everything.
Same time, okay. Same place, everything, yeah.
With regard to Mike Brown, you were talking about his qualifications. Originally, if he appeared in front of the committee that was headed by Susan Collins and our favorite Dino, Joe Lieberman, it'll be interesting to see if they will look into how they got snookered by this guy.
Yeah.
And who else has they been snookered by?
Well, my suspicion is that they're just going to quickly replace him, probably today, get that into the, so that the news cycle will then change to, okay, now somebody, you know, competent is in charge, and that's just going to get swept under the rug. What's your take on that, Christy?
Well, they've already sent for him to come home. He's on his way back to Washington, ABC News reported just a little while ago. And I think that part of the blame for all of these new allegations that have come up about how he lied on his resume and that sort of thing, we have to look at Congress for part of that. Their confirmation hearings for this guy were 42 minutes long, and only five senators showed up. So I think this really should shine a light on Congress to say, hey, we've got to really look out here, too. We can't obviously trust what this White House is sending to us. We need to do a little bit better of a vetting process.
Yeah, in fact, according to the news feed that we've got here, Michael Brown just was let go, just now. Doug Cunningham, your thoughts on that?
Well, the news report that I saw says that Vice Admiral Thad Allen from the Coast Guard will be replacing
him on the ground.
I had not seen that he's going to be let go entirely, but the last thing I heard is on his way back to
Washington.
Apparently
he was fired in the last 5 minutes.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, obviously that head has rolled, but, you know, the buck really stops on the president's desk with this. The federal government is supposed to come to the rescue of people in catastrophes. They did not come to the rescue. As a result, many, many people may have died needlessly. So the buck stops there. If they did fire Michael Brown 5 minutes ago, and I have no reason to doubt you saying that, Tom, if they did do that, that's not adequate. That's not all there is to it. The president and the administration, the Republican Party that's in power in the federal government, bears a great deal of responsibility for this catastrophic failure.
Mike in Buffalo, New York, you're live.
Hey, everybody. Well, it looks like the undisputed champions of the class war are at it again down in New Orleans. They're trying to carve it up and reshape it and use this crisis to their advantage. They're so good at this. You talked earlier about their dirty tricks and character assassinations. I think they're even better at looking at the big picture in economic terms and in reconstruction terms of devastated areas and things. There's a good article in the London Times, timesonline.co.uk, and there's also a Wall Street Journal article that touches on this. They're trying to transform Louisiana into a Republican stronghold.
It's going to be a new theme park. I predict that what you're going to see is that New Orleans is going to be reinvented as the Disneyland version of New Orleans. It's going to be reinvented by Republican wealthy contractors, and you're going to have, you know, this is urban renewal done by virtue of hurricane and flood, and without, by the way, without the city of New Orleans, Louisiana becomes a red state. And that's something that I'm sure has not escaped Karl Rove's notice. Mike, thanks a lot for the call and for pointing that out. What are your thoughts on that, Christy?
Well, did you see the Wall Street Journal today had a piece or a little bit about Congressman Richard Baker, who is a Republican from Louisiana,
right,
from the Baton Rouge area, and he was overheard actually telling lobbyists, well, we finally cleaned up public housing in New Orleans.
There you
we
go.
We couldn't do it, but God did. I think that sort of sums up the mentality we're looking at, frighteningly enough.
Yeah, you combine that with the story that I believe was in the New York Times, I could be wrong, I don't have it right in front of me, about how the 50-some-odd billion dollars in disaster relief now that's being allocated, that Mississippi is first in line because they have a Republican governor. They got Trent Lott, and you know, they got two Republican senators, including Trent Lott, a senior senator. And so it's all Republicans at the head of the line in Mississippi, whereas in Louisiana, you've got a Democratic governor, you got a Democratic mayor, you got Mary Landrieu, a Democratic senator. And so Mississippi's going to get a large chunk of this money, and they're going to have first choice of what they want done because they're Republicans, after all.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah. Doug, your thoughts on that?
Well, this whole thing really brought home the class differences in America, and it underscored that economic class can mean the difference between life and death. Colin Powell, in his criticism of the federal response, said that it was more about class than it was about race, that poor people obviously were the victims here, and they suffered. So all issues going forward related to economic justice and class issues, Americans ought to pay very, very close attention to, because there are poor people, obviously, not just in New Orleans, but all over this country, in cities everywhere, and they are victimized when something like this happens, but more importantly, they suffer every single day. So it's good in that sense that the class issue has finally emerged in America. It's horrible that it took this kind of a tragedy to do that. But class warfare has been conducted for a long time by corporations. American working families have got to defend themselves against it.
Yeah, and the more that these guys are engaged in class warfare, the more they scream, anybody who talks about it is engaging in class warfare. So it's like their way of insulating themselves from criticism. We've been talking with Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website, one of the best progressive websites out there for great information. Doug Cunningham, reporter and anchor for the Workers Independent News, WIN. What's the website, Doug?
LaborRadio.org.
That's right. I hear it every day. LaborRadio.org. Thank you very much. And Doug Cunningham with WIN, Workers Independent News, LaborRadio.org. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Much appreciated. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Have you ever got a note from your bank saying,
"Greetings, your account just shrank by 25 or 30 bucks. Sorry, friend, you're out of luck.
You
bounced a check. That's what it was. It happens to the best of us. Please cover it quick."
And when you do, you find you got another one or two. Because what they done, I've never seen it fail. They notified you by the U.S. mail. Cost them almost 40 cents, but more than worth that little expense. Because by the time you receive that letter, their situation got even better. Your first overdraft cost a couple more. Now you owe them a pile of money for sure.
They hope you never wonder in your little head why they don't send you an email instead. A quicker way and cheaper, too, for them as well as the customer, you.
Or an automated call to your phone or pager would be an improvement vastly major.
But then they wouldn't make so much money. So anyhow, that Jim Tur, by the way, BlueCanyonProductions.com. Welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour. 5 minutes before the hour. 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. Today, a federal court has ruled that George W. Bush has the right to completely ignore the Bill of Rights, that he can ignore the Constitution of the United States of America. We're checking on this. I have no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind, although I don't know for sure, but that the judge who ruled on this or the judges who ruled on this were probably appointed by Republicans. But you will recall the Sixth Amendment says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. The Seventh Amendment says that no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined other than according to the rule of law. The right to trial by jury shall be preserved. And the Eighth Amendment says excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. In other words, the Fourth Amendment says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, and papers against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall be issued. That says an arrest warrant or a search warrant, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and or the persons or things to be seized. In other words, if you want to arrest somebody, you have to prove to a judge that they committed a crime. And then after you've proved to the judge that they've committed a crime, you've got to give them a fair, a quick trial before an impartial jury. But no, not with Jose Padilla, a U.S. citizen. George Bush says, no, this guy, he was looking at websites about how to make dirty bombs. Yes, that's the evidence we know so far that they have against him. He looked at websites. And I think that's why they don't want to let this guy loose, and they don't want to let him talk to anybody, because they don't have a case. That's why they don't want there to be a trial. If they had a case, they would have a trial against this guy. It would be a huge show trial. There'd be a big deal made out of it. They'd say, see, we told you so. We've got terrorists here in the United States. And they'd get great PR for it. Instead, they've got to hide it, cover it up, and bury it, which is the way this administration does absolutely everything.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where being progressive never felt so good. In fact, don't tell anybody. A place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Speaking of fiendishly plotting for total world domination, bigotsforbucks.com, profiting from teaching Americans to hate Americans, believe it or not, bigotsforbucks.com, they have the Karl Rove book playbook, the Karl Rove playbook posted over there. This is really and truly fascinating. The rules of propaganda, of political propaganda. Just for a moment, try to consider who might be the person who actually wrote the original version of this. I'll give you a clue. It was not in the 16th century, and it was not Niccolo Machiavelli. The function of propaganda lies in calling the masses' attention to certain facts, processes, and necessities whose significance is for the first time placed within their field of vision. The whole art consists in doing this so skillfully that everyone will be convinced that the fact is real, the process necessary, the necessity correct. In effect, for the most part, it must be aimed at the emotions, and only to a very limited degree, at the intellect. Is this starting to sound like maybe it came out of the offices of Faux News or one of the right-wing think tanks? All propaganda must be popular, and its intellectual level must be adjusted to the most limited intelligence among those to whom it is addressed. Consequently, the greater the mass you intend to reach, the lower your message's purely intellectual level has to be. For example, anybody with half a brain would know that the slogan, "We got to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here," makes no sense. I mean, you know what? There's only one terrorist in the world. I mean, if you're going to fight him in Iraq, then he can't come over here. Well, if there was only one terrorist in the world, I suppose that makes sense. But what if there's two? You're fighting one in Iraq, the other one comes over here. What if there's 20? What if there's 200? What if there's 2,000? What if there's 2 million? What if there's 200 million? What if there's 2 billion? It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it so doesn't make sense that you would think that when somebody said, "Well, we got to fight the terrorists over there so we don't have to fight them here," that people would laugh. You would think the media would fall over like, come on, you can't. What, you think these guys can't chew gum and walk at the same time? You think somebody who organized, planned, and executed 9/11 was stupid? Intelligence and morality don't necessarily correspond to each other. They might have been terribly immoral people. They might have been evil. Books.com website calls the Karl Rove playbook. The author of this part of the playbook says, no, 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 no. The greater the mass it's intended to reach, the lower its purely intellectual level has to be. The more modest its intellectual weight, the more exclusively it takes into consideration the emotions of the masses of the people, the more effective your propaganda will be. and thence to the heart of the broad masses. But wait a minute, you say, you know, most issues really are not just cut and dry. There's, you know, many sides to an issue. You have, you know, terrorism, for example. Is it just that people are evil? Is it just that the hate is because of our freedoms? Or could poverty have something to do with it? Could oppression have something to do with it? Could historic injustices have something to do with it? Could religious differences have something to do with it? Could our intervening on behalf of one religious faction at the expense of another religious faction over history have something to do with it? Could the fact that we're taking their oil and their resources have something to do with it? Could our occupation of their territory and our alignment with dictators and our putting into place dictators like the Shah of Iran and like Saddam Hussein and like the Saudi royal family, could that have something to do with it? Oh, but then it gets complicated. As Adolf Hitler writes in Mein Kampf, it is a mistake to make propaganda many-sided, like scientific instruction, for instance. The receptivity of the great masses is very limited. Their intelligence is small, and their power of forgetting is enormous. You see, I know that if the cons in this administration haven't actually read Mein Kampf, they certainly understand the principles, because they have been playing them ever since Ronald Reagan came into power. And they have been playing them like a fiddle. And that's why I've got this bet with Heidi, who does the morning show with me on KPOJ, that within 30 days, and we'll see, here I am being very public, I'm betting a pound of blueberries, that within 30 days, more than half of Americans, according to any national poll, more than half of Americans will say that the prime responsibility for the death of all those folks in Louisiana lies with the Democrats in Louisiana. The mayor, the governor, local officials, the bureaucracy, whatever you want to call it. And fewer than half of Americans will say that George W. Bush has any responsibility for it. Because I know that they know these principles. This is how to make the big lie work. Adolf Hitler went on to say, effective propaganda must be limited to a very few points, and you must harp on these slogans over and over until the last member of the public understands what you want him to understand by your slogan. As soon as you sacrifice this slogan and try to be many-sided, the effect will piddle away. For the crowd can neither digest nor retain the material offered. In this way, your result is weakened and in the end, entirely canceled out. He says the function of propaganda is not to weigh and ponder the rights of different people, but exclusively to emphasize the one right which it has set out to argue for. You know the old slogan from corporate marketing and advertising, KISS, keep it simple, stupid? Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf says, its task is not to make an objective study of the truth and then set it before the masses with academic fairness. Its task is to serve our own goals, always and unflinchingly. You see Ann Coulter on TV, you hear these cons going on and on and on. They don't care about the truth. The truth is not an issue for them. In some way, that puts us, those of us who actually do care about the truth, at somewhat of a disadvantage. I remember when I first met Professor Jack Davis at the University of California in Davis. And Jack is the author of a book called Columbus and Other Cannibals. And a brilliant book, and it so impressed me that when I was writing a book that I wrote called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, I hopped on a plane and went out to California to sit down and talk with this guy. He was, at that time, this was about 10 years ago, he was in his 60s, I would guess. Long gray hair, tall man, clearly largely Native American. And he told me one of the big challenges, one of the big problems that the Native Americans confronted when Europeans first got here was that there was a contagious mental illness that the Europeans brought with them that the Native Americans recognized because it periodically erupted among their people, but they had ways to deal with it when it was just one or two people here and there. He said the Native American word for it in the language of his tribe, and I'm sorry, I forget which tribe he was a member of, it was Wetiko. And it means, it's a variation on to be a cannibal, to eat one another person's life force. And he said basically the natives were faced with this challenge of, if you fight people who are using dirty tactics, if you fight them the same way they're fighting you, and you have numerically superior odds, you might win, but you become them, so you've already lost. Or you can run away, but eventually they may come and get you. Or you roll over and die. And he said different Native American groups at different times chose all three of those strategies. And none of them was effective. And then other than the fourth strategy, which is kind of go along and hide out, but keep your truth alive. And someday your day will come when you can stand up and say, this is the truth. And no matter how hard these people have tried to suppress it, the truth is greater than any single dictator, any single insane culture. This is the truth. And so, you know, we're confronted again using, here you have the Republican Party, the Karl Rove playbook, the Republican Party, and even some Democratic conservatives using Adolf Hitler's instructions on propaganda against we the people. And we have to decide how to react. Do we become like them? Do we engage in a reciprocal big lie? I don't think so. I think we tell the truth. Does that mean that we're going to win? Maybe not, at least over the short term. But over the long term, truth will prevail. Here's another one from Adolf Hitler from Mein Kampf. As soon as our own propaganda allows so much as a glimmer of the correctness of their side, of the other side of the argument, the foundation for doubt in our own side has been laid. The masses are then in no position to distinguish where others' injustice ends and where our own begins. In other words, never, ever admit you're wrong. Sound familiar? I'm telling you, these guys have a playbook. It's already been written. It's quite clear. It's right out there. You can read it yourself. And they are following it very carefully. And George Bush is going to take no blame for this, even though he was personally briefed by the head of the National Weather Service before Katrina hit. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is there anybody here who'd like to change his clothes into a uniform?
And welcome back.
Is there anybody here who thinks they're only serving out a raging storm? Is there anybody here with glory in their eyes, loyal to the end, whose duty is to die? I want to see him. I want to wish him luck. I want to shake his hand. Want to call his name. Put a medal on the man.
There you go. Welcome back. Talk Radio for the Rest of Us is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Joe Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister. The cleverest trick used in propaganda was to accuse your enemy of doing themselves what you are doing. How long have you been hearing Limbaugh and everybody else over there on the Reich say, oh, those Democrats, they just want to engage in class warfare, while they are rigidifying class structure in America, taking away the ability of middle-class people to get a free college education? Ronald Reagan ended it in California, others before in other states. A system that Thomas Jefferson created when he created the University of Virginia as a free school. Oh, your class warfare if you're talking about this stuff. No, I'm sorry. Warren Buffett was right. The second richest man in America when he said, yes, there is class warfare in America, and my class is winning. He was right. When he pointed out that his secretary pays more taxes than he does, he was right. A billionaire. The cleverest trick, Joe Goebbels said, used in propaganda is to accuse your enemies of doing what you are doing. Propaganda, he said, is the sharpest weapon in conquering the state, in defending and building the state. It is a means to an end. Its purpose is to lead people to an understanding and then allow them to willingly and without internal resistance devote themselves to the tasks and goals of a superior leadership. Propaganda, in the end, miraculously makes the unpopular popular, enabling even a government most difficult decisions to secure the resolute support of the people. By 80% of Americans support keeping the estate tax, only 30% of Americans support keeping a death tax. If you can convince Americans, average Americans, that when they die they will face a death tax, they will oppose it. If you say, but, you know, one-tenth of 1% of Americans bear 50% of the burden of the death tax, and it only affects the top 2% of Americans economically. The estate tax. And that the reason for it, and the reason why it is, keep in mind, this is a tax that generates $30, $40 billion a year, and it's only hitting a few thousand people. These people are fabulously wealthy. It is not in any way inhibiting their ability to make sure that their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, seven generations down the road, never have to work again. No problem there. But they are, I'm telling you, you can see this propaganda on TV right now. They are literally running ads that say, you, they're talking to you, the listener, you will have to pay a tax when you die. No, you don't have to pay a tax when you die. When you die, you're dead. If there is a transfer of wealth when you die, if there's a transaction when you die, there's a transaction tax. There is when you're alive, too, by the way. You give money to somebody, even in your own family. If it's over $10,000, you have to pay tax on it, or they have to pay tax on it. We pretty much tax all transactions in this society. It's how we facilitate transactions. In order to be able to facilitate transactions, somebody has to make sure that there's currency. Somebody has to make sure that it's viable. Somebody has to keep the banks honest. Somebody has to make sure that the infrastructure is there. Somebody has to keep it all running. Somebody has to enforce contracts through the courts. What do? That's called the commons. That's called our government. That's what does it. And therefore, whenever we're using that, whenever we engage in a transaction that uses money, we tax it to pay for the commons that support the ability to do that. Oh, but the Reich would say, let's make an exception for millionaires and billionaires. They're very fond of exceptions for millionaires and billionaires. And now they're trying to convince you of it. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
Oh, yeah, that's the Bushies for you.
Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
Oh, George, I hope you're having fun.
Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
And thank you, Jim Turr, that from BlueCanyonProductions.com. Welcome back, my friends. It's 34 minutes past the hour. You know how newspapers sometimes, they have this errata, you know, the corrections. Two corrections for the day. Number one, apparently Michael Brown has not yet been fired. He simply has been relieved of his responsibilities with regard to Hurricane Katrina. We will, you know, that story is still unfolding. although maybe he's been fired. I'm getting conflicting reports. And number two, it was Professor Jack Forbes at the University of California, Davis, not Professor Jack Davis. For those of you who were making notes, Jack Forbes is the Native American who is the author of Columbus and Other Cannibals, one of my favorite books. Cindy Sheehan is with us. Hey, Cindy. Whoop, let me turn you up here. Hey, Cindy. You still there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine now.
Great.
Cindy, it's great talking to you again. It's been seems like a week or so since we've spoken.
Uh-huh.
How and where are you?
Right now, I'm in San Francisco getting ready to go down to L.A. There was an event in Los Angeles at the Agape Center in Culver City tonight that Arianna Huffington and I will be speaking at. It's kind of like a rally to send me back off on the tour. I'm going to go back on the Bring Them Home Now bus tour from Camp Casey. I'll be going to Atlanta tomorrow. And I'm just doing great. I think this is just, this is just a time that we really, all of us, need to be exercising our freedom of speech and our constitutional responsibilities as citizens of America to change the country.
I absolutely agree with you. How is your mother, by the way?
My mom is doing better. I talked to her on the phone yesterday. She's able to start talking and things like that. I was listening to you about Michael Brown. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Senator Barbara Boxer from California this morning, and she said that it has even come out today that he lied on his resume.
Yes, he
did. To get the job. Oh, yeah. I rarely get to watch the news because I'm
I don't know if it's in the news. It's in, the Center for American Progress has got a whole thing on it and their progress report today. So it's it will get into the news, no doubt. Yeah.
Right.
And the other big thing that came out yesterday was apparently one of the big high points of his career was that when he was with the International Arabian Horse Association, that he actually busted somebody for illegally liposuctioning the butt of their horse. That was his career accomplishment when he was there.
Sounds like a George Bush career.
Yeah. It's really, really amazing. So I think the Cindy Sheehan work, your work, has been somewhat eclipsed by Hurricane Katrina, and I suppose in some regards, rightfully so, that we pay attention to the disaster that's unfolding in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, we still have young men and women over in Iraq who are in harm's way, and there have been deaths in the last few days, and as certainly American deaths, obviously Iraqi deaths every single day that goes by, that we continue this illegal and inappropriate occupation of another country. How do you handle the delicate balancing act of not wanting to seem like you're grandstanding or not wanting to seem like you're saying, hey, come back here, let's change the news cycle, and yet at the same time you have a very real cause, a very real issue, it's literally a life and death issue that Americans it's almost like the American attention span is only able to focus on one thing at a time.
Exactly.
How do you deal with it?
Number one is just to keep going out there and pounding. 12 soldiers have already died this month, and what is today, the 9th?
Yeah.
And I think the hurricane, the disaster in the Gulf states, is so intimately linked to the disaster in Iraq. And George Bush has been telling us for years that what he's doing in Iraq is making America safer. And I believe the people, the unnecessary deaths in New Orleans and those areas, those people are collateral damage to the war in Iraq. If all of our resources were not in Iraq, we could have done something to help the people in the Gulf states. And he has made our country so vulnerable, whether it's a man-made attack or a natural disaster. His policies have hurt and harmed the people of America. And these are the connections that we have to make. And we're not playing any blame game, and we're not playing politics, because like you said, Tom, this is flesh and blood. This is, these are lives at stake. These are how many families in America now are devastated because of his policies.
Yeah, too many.
Too many.
Yeah.
I mean, one was too many.
Yes.
One was too many. Now there's tens of thousands of people who have been devastated by George Bush. And he, if he was an honorable man, which we know he's not, he would resign. He's incompetent. He is dangerously incompetent. When he was just running companies into the ground and, being an alcoholic and a drug abuser, he just affected a few people. His policies affect the world. he needs to be stopped, and we need to not relax until he's stopped.
I think it's so wonderful that you're maintaining this focus on this single issue, because I'm telling you, the news cycle is going to come back around to you. And you're going to Washington, D.C. now, and my recollection is that you had said, the last time we talked, you had said that after you left Crawford that you were going to go back to Washington, D.C., and you were going to stay there until Bush changed his policy. Is that still what you're planning?
We are absolutely doing it. We're taking the bus tour to the Unite for Peace and Justice rally, and after the rally, we're going to set up Camp Casey. Now it would be Camp Casey 4, because we have Camp Casey 3 in Covington, Louisiana. Through Michael Moore's website and Veterans for Peace, the other day we raised $250,000 to send supplies to Camp Casey 3 in Covington, Louisiana. And Covington, Louisiana is heavily African Americans, very poor. I visited there in July, and because our government can't help the people of America, we Americans have to help the people of America. Because, you know, George Bush has just proven time and time again he doesn't care about Americans no matter where they are in the world.
Well, not altogether, Cindy Sheehan. He cares about the millionaires and billionaires very much.
Exactly.
I mean, he goes way out of his
way
for them.
Well, look at Halliburton got the contract awarded to clean up New Orleans, and you're just thinking, I was thinking, why did they let this disaster happen? And then now you know why.
Yeah, well, it's not actually New Orleans; it's the naval shipyard near there, but close enough. And the former head of FEMA, Joe Albaugh, who was prior to being the head of FEMA, was the head of George Bush's campaign in 2000.
Right.
Albaugh, after he left FEMA, took a job as the lead. Or I don't know if it's the lead, but as a lobbyist for Halliburton. So should it surprise us that Halliburton is getting $500 million to clean up the Gulf Coast?
You know what, they're just such flagrant criminals, you know, and it's just time that they have to be stopped. You know, we just can't let this continue. And that's why I went to Crawford and sat down. You know, I was like, enough is enough. This has to stop.
Yeah. And you were so brave to do it. I just have to tell you, you are absolutely one of my heroes, Cindy Sheehan.
Thank you. Are you going to write something for my new book?
Yes, I am, actually.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Cool. Great.
I got a note from your publisher, and my question was, does Cindy know about this? Is she in favor of it? And he said yes, and I said, no, I'd be pleased to.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I heard today, too? I heard that some hurricane survivors went to Washington, and they're going to stand outside of the White House, and I think that's great. I think anybody who has ever had a grievance against this administration should do what we did and just go there and stay until the grievances are addressed.
Right.
And just to call attention to the ruinous, disastrous policies of this administration.
Yep. Cindy, you and I are about the same age. I'm a little older than you are, I think. But when we were in school, we studied, way back when, we studied about the Bonus Army in the late 1920s, early 1930s,
right.
where the victim, the veterans of World War I wanted their bonus payments paid early because of the Great Depression, and they camped out by the White House. And then Herbert Hoover sent MacArthur and Eisenhower in there to bust them up, and they set their little village on fire, and it was really the end of the Hoover administration.
Right.
It seems to me like what you have created here is a new Bonus Army movement.
Right, and that's absolutely what we need to do.
Yeah, it's...
You know, we need to just like, finally stand up and be counted as American citizens.
What's the best way right now? Clearly, I know you want people to hop on a plane or however and get to Washington, D.C. for September 24th, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
My recollection.
Right, right,
yeah, September 24th for that rally.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who don't have the ability to do that or the means to do that. What's the best way that people can stand with you in solidarity and can also help out what you're doing?
Okay, they can, of course, donate money to Camp KC3 in Covington to help American refugees, really. That's what they are. And
let's call them displaced. Cindy, if I may interrupt you, Jesse Jackson is going around saying, let's not use the word refugee, because if you look in the dictionary, refugee literally means a person from another country. He's suggesting that this is kind of a way of characterizing, you know, putting these people in the same boat as the Haitian refugees, for example. Let's call them displaced persons or like that. And maybe it's politically correct, but nonetheless,
right.
I mean, you know. So forgive me for interrupting you. But
That's okay. And you can go to meetwithcindy.org and find out where the tour is going to be and come out, you know, for the bus tour. Or you can go to United for Peace and Justice website. There's rallies all over the country that day. But what we're doing right now is putting pressure on Congress to stand up and do what's right. So put pressure on your elected official to do what's right. And if you have to go and set up a Camp Casey outside their district office, then do it.
There you go. That's a marvelous idea. That's great. So meetwithcindy.org. Meetwithcindy.org.
And that would be like a portal that you could get to donate to the Veterans for Peace or for Camp Casey 3. You could find out where we're going to be on the bus tour. You could donate money to the bus tour to keep us going. You can go to United for Peace and Justice to find out where your local rallies
Absolutely wonderful. Cindy Sheehan, you are doing such marvelous work.
Thank you, Tom.
Good luck. Godspeed.
Too.
And thank you so much for being with us today.
Anytime. You know that.
Okay. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Cindy Sheehan, meetwithcindy.org. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you, Cindy Sheehan, for all your efforts, by the way.
Yes.
And I guess I'm very short-winded. I don't even know what to say. I didn't think I was going to get on this quickly. I appreciate that. I was just thinking, I don't know if I had mentioned this before. Maybe I did. Obviously, I'm a great fan of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's. And I believe he said, we have earned the, maybe I said this before, please forgive me, we have earned the hatred of entrenched greed.
Yeah, absolutely. And Franklin Roosevelt went after that entrenched greed in a big way. And some, I'll have to revisit that rant fairly soon. but it is a whole other rant about what Roosevelt was really all about in the war that he declared in 1936, and it had nothing to do with Hitler. But we'll leave that for another time. Margie in Oregon. Hey, Margie.
Hi, Tom. I try to be objective. And I find all this information about the hurricane very confusing, especially regarding Governor of Louisiana, Blanco.
Yes.
Now, I hear reports that things were lined up all around and from FEMA that she wouldn't let in. Do you understand what's the truth of that situation?
No, I don't. My understanding of it is that there's two things going on here at the same time. One is that on Saturday she wrote a letter to and contacted George W. Bush and said, please declare this a disaster area and federalize this. On Sunday he did so. And then the hurricane hit, and it was his responsibility and FEMA's responsibility at that point to coordinate all this stuff. That's one understanding. The other, however, is that on, I believe it was Thursday of the following week, the Washington Post ran a story in which they said that the governor had not, according to a senior administration official in the Bush administration, the governor had not requested the assistance in the federalization until Wednesday, and therefore it was all her fault. And because she didn't request that federalization, they could not come in. In other words, essentially by her inaction, she was keeping them out. Then a few hours later, the Washington Post printed a retraction saying that the senior government official who told us this must have lied to us. I mean, they didn't use that language, but essentially that's what it was, because that senior government official was wrong. And, in fact, the letter from the governor is all over the Internet. You can see it over at BuzzFlash.com, among other places, and that the senior administration official had lied openly and brazenly to the Washington Post, and they had reprinted his lie. And that reprinted lie is now being repeated day after day after day on right-wing talk radio programs, even though it's already been discredited. And who is the senior administration official who leaked this information? Well, we're not really sure. You know, as Bush would say,
I don't know.
Yeah.
We're going to find out. The senior administration official.
Don't know.
Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
So, and neither does the Washington Post, apparently, because they're unwilling to report on this as if it was a story.
Well, now, can't the president override anything if he wants to by executive order?
Well, he can override local authority once he's federalized an area, and the governor had asked him to do that the day before the hurricane hit, so yes.
Okay.
That's my understanding of it. I'm not an attorney, and certainly not, the world's expert on this stuff, but that's my understanding of it. Margie, I've got to move along.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Amy in San Diego. Hey, Amy.
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm calling about something that you guys talked about a while ago. Some guy called in, and he was saying now the Democrats messed up Social Security. We've messed it up all along. And you pointed out how that's not true. But there's one thing that I hear the right wing say a lot that is misleading as well. And they keep saying, you know, there's different dates. Some of them say 2025 it'll be bankrupt, and some of them say 2040 it'll be.
You're talking about Social Security?
Yes.
Yeah, it's never going to be bankrupt.
Exactly. That's what
it's never going to be bankrupt.
They say that all the time.
Yeah, there's the explanation is very simple, but you know, you go back to Adolf Hitler's talking points, it requires more than two details. And
right.
And to say it's going to be bankrupt, that's only one detail. It works perfectly
right.
well with the Mein Kampf school of propaganda. I'll explain that after we come back from the break. Amy,
okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks,
and thanks
Tom.
For bringing that up. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. The pill that will help you escape the Matrix. 10 minutes before the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And who's gonna pay the bill?
I don't think George will.
Who's gonna pay the bill?
Or any of those other neocons?
Not Rush Limbaugh. Not George will.
See, I told
not
you.
Those chicken hawks on Capitol Hill. Not the tax cut billionaires, you know the drill. You're gonna pay the bill.
Yes, indeed. You want to reconstruct Iraq? You want to have a war so that George Bush can get some political capital? Yeah, you're gonna pay the bill. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Paul. Paul Leto in Seattle.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Paul. One of the great voting rights activists in the United States. I'm honored that you would call the program. What's up?
Well, you know, I was wondering if, you know, in light of Grover Norquist's comment that he wanted to make the government so small it could drown it in a bathtub, I wonder if that bathtub is Lake Pontchartrain.
I know. The irony of that was not lost on me. It's why I wrote the piece for Common Dreams 2 days ago, essentially suggesting that.
And, you know, kind of it puts a lot of us in a strange position because it kind of almost gets liberals and progressives begging for a military solution to the whole thing when all that's really needed is competence and a little bit of heart and delivering supplies.
Yeah, in the first place.
Yeah.
In the first place. The other thing that I find amazing, Paul, is all the reports that are coming out of New Orleans that places were actually not being terrorized by gang. Certainly there was some gang activity and there was some you know bad stuff going on. People were raped and killed. But it was such a rare occurrence that in many places, particularly in the Superdome, that most people were unaware that was going on. And yet Fox News was like drumming on that continuously. Black people run amok. That was their theme. And, you know, it's for obvious reasons. I mean, you know, it's all about race and class. In my opinion, mostly class. But, you know, race is a piece of it and another part of the tragedy of the Reich Wing here in the United States.
Well, anytime you can increase fear, the answer to fear is, you know, or the perceived answer to fear is security. And security is the big right-wing thing, either military security or even security about one's soul. That's the essence of religious fundamentalism.
Yeah, and authoritarianism, the whole idea that the purpose of government is to be a strict father as opposed to a nurturing mother. These, you know, George Bush doesn't even have the capacity to understand a nurturing mother, perhaps because he didn't have one, you know, at the risk of putting on my psychoanalyst or my psychotherapist hat for a moment, but, you know, who knows? You always take a chance when you try to shrink somebody else. Paul, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to David Poole for helping produce our program, to Louise for producing a program, and David also for engineering it. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. You can get to the chat room at tomhartman.com. Click live chat. Great to see you all today. It is wonderful to have you hang out and participate with us. Thanks to our affiliates, to our sponsors, and to you for listening. Have a great weekend. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever it is for you, enjoy. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.